Welcome to Law Matters for another fortnight, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. And Jodie Hoffman with you for the next hour here on 100.9 FM. And we are going to be talking about the budget. Of course, the federal budget that for 2014-15 was handed down last night, and a lot of discussion it has generated in regards to cuts that are going to be happening across the board. So Dennis Eggington, CEO of the ALS, is going to pop into the studio and have a chat with us about that shortly. Later in the program, speaking with one of our lawyers from our Kalgoorlie office, Jonathan Crabtree. You might remember back in March there was an incident where a publican in Coolgardie put a sign on their window saying that no Indigenous person would be served in that establishment until the return of a mobile phone. Well, there's some things that have evolved from then. We'll remind you of that very incident and what's subsequently taken place as a result with an update from our Kalgoorlie lawyer, Jonathan Crabtree. Do stay tuned. Our radio, you're on Law Matters with Jodie Hoffman, with you until for the next hour. And got to remind our listeners that Sorry Day is coming up on the 26th of May, and Noongar Radio are keen for as many people as possible to pop into the studios at 207 Beaufort Street in Perth to record and share your very own Stolen Generation stories for Noongar Radio. So if you do want to know more about that, give the mob here at 6NME a call or drop in at 207 Beaufort Street as soon as possible so that your own stories can be recorded and shared in time for Sorry Day 2014. Well, we all waited with bated breath last night for the handing down of the 2014-15 federal budget. And for a lot of people, it was pretty disappointing news in terms of what it's actually going to mean in our hip pockets at the end of the day. Over the next 5 years, $534 million is going to be cut from Indigenous programs administered by the Prime Minister and Cabinet and Health portfolios. In the studio to discuss it more with us is Dennis Eggington, the Chief Executive Officer of the Aboriginal Legal Service. Dennis, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Jodes. Good morning to all our listeners.
There was some talk around the end of last year that there would be some cuts coming our way, looking forward to the election and what it would bring. And I guess for a lot of our mob last night delivered a real blow, didn't it?
Well, it was something that we should have expected, because it wasn't so long ago, possibly only a month ago, that Warren Mundine came out and said that and told his advisory group that they're probably going to go down in history as being the most hated people in the country. And if, in fact, the Indigenous advisory group, chaired by Mundine, is responsible for what we see today in the cuts, then I would think lots of people are very angry with what's happening. The cuts are really have long-term effects for us and our relationship with government and the peoples of Australia. Of course, I'm not sure how you progress concepts like reconciliation or closing the gap or constitutional recognition when you have a look at what is really happening with these cuts, particularly in the area of health, which is a major blow to our community-controlled organisations. You know, Aboriginal languages, there's a proposed $9.5 million cut to supporting languages, just after all of this time where we've really worked hard through organisations like Aboriginal Radio and our FATSLs networks across this country to maintain and revive languages. And if you've been involved in that type of area, you'd know very, very quickly that a whole lot of languages have been reinstigated because of the effort put in. Those are the sorts of things that I think are really going to be quite devastating for our people. There is a concentration on mainstreaming. There's a concentration on remote services. I'm not saying that remote services aren't needed, but they shouldn't be at the expense of other programs. And, you know, it's a really vicious funding regime for our communities over the next 4 or 5 years.
Dennis, you're a former director of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples. Now, the budget has confirmed that the National Congress will not get the $15 million that was earmarked for that body for the next 3 years. There was so much work that went into setting up the National Congress and consultation that was taking place around the country, and so much work setting up a body that was, you know, representative of men and women across the country, and it looks like that's a bit of a bleak future there.
Look, I would think that Congress really needs to rethink about how it will do business, how it will survive. Of course, there's the economic question, but there's also the question about community and community involvement, and how do you, you know, while there is this announcement, there's no cuts. I mean, it's becoming quite common knowledge among Aboriginal people, particularly members of Congress, that Congress Board did have a chance to sign off on those funding agreements before the federal government got in place and announced that they wouldn't renew them. So you need to take all of that into consideration. But, you know, we do need a national voice, someone that can make people accountable. And as I said, it seems to me that this government, who's got the support of Australia, you know, they won government, and they've got the support of, you know, 51% of people who need to vote. So they're saying that we've said sorry, we've given you native title, we've embarked on a reconciliation process, states and territories have had redress programs which are somehow a way of saying, well, we've dealt with stolen generations. States and territories have had programs to deal with stolen wages. There's nothing much else we have to do. So, you know, you're out there now in Australia. You're out there to stand on your own two feet, be a part of Australia. There's nothing extra and special that we should be doing for the vast majority of Aboriginal people. I think what they're saying, though, is that there are still lots of work to be done in remote and rural Australia, and that seems to be that's the message, with another very strong message, and that is that all Aboriginal people don't deserve any special services. What we need to do is concentrate on the very most disadvantage of Australia's First Peoples, and, you know, that's a really big move away from what are our rights as Australia's First Peoples. Well, it doesn't look like we've got any special place in this country, and that budget is reflective of that view, I think.
It certainly makes you think that we're definitely not the lucky country, as Australia is often referred to as. The cuts, you're talking about some of our most disadvantaged peoples and how these cuts are going to affect them. A huge area of the cuts is going into the area of health. When you look at the health indicator factors of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people around the country, the fact that if it wasn't for places like Aboriginal medical services around the country, a lot of our mob wouldn't access medical services because quite often there's not enough knowledge within a lot of mainstream services to deal sensitively and appropriately with Aboriginal people seeking assistance, is there?
No, not at all. And of course, I don't at all disagree with the concept of putting monies and efforts into the front end of the problem, so you're not dealing with problems at the end of it, including, you know, diabetes and lifestyle diseases and, you know, smoking related diseases and those sorts of things. I mean, that's what the law and justice systems need to do. They need to put money into preventing people developing pathways into crime and into things. But that's all to do with poverty. So taking money from medical services to put into research is not the same as taking money out of those services and putting them directly into families that need that support, families that can have young children healthy and happy and growing up in an environment where they're not disadvantaged. Of course, the other way to do that is give us our rights, give us our resources to our country and let us develop our own ways of funding and looking after ourselves through, you know, through the vast resources that this country has got. They belong to us. Give some of them back. That's a very simple way to do it. But, you know, if you look at for instance, $54 million being allocated to police stations out of Aboriginal money, well, what the hell's going on? Why isn't that just coming out of normal state and territory coffers to fund and put in police stations if they're needed? I mean, why use Commonwealth Aboriginal Affairs money to build police stations for the states and territories who have got some of the toughest laws, have got more blackfellas locked up than any other place in the world, and they're putting more police stations in? Well, what that means is more people are going to get arrested. Yeah, there might be a little bit of law and order, but it means more Aboriginal people coming into contact with the police and getting locked up. There is no doubt about that, because we've seen it happen with the multifunctional service providers that have been put across the state. Once you put a police station somewhere, you know, stop sign goes up. People go through it. People are getting arrested. But to take services from our Aboriginal community to prop up state and territories who are really hard in their law and order policies against Aboriginal people, like Northern Territory, like WA, where these are going to be put, just says it quite clearly that there is this disregard for the welfare of our people. It looks like, on the surface, yes, bringing law and order into those places, but those remote communities have got their own Aboriginal law and culture, and that's the stuff that needs to be strengthened and given credence to, so that people can control their own lives. They don't need a occupying force like the police to come in and protect them.
You're tuned to Law Matters on Noongar Radio in Perth. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour. My guest in the studio is Dennis Eggington, Chief Executive of the Aboriginal Legal Service. And we're discussing the federal budget that was handed down last night. And not great news for a lot of people, but particularly those who are already struggling. So we're just trying to nut it out this morning, make a little bit of sense of it, and hopefully answer some questions that you may have in relation to the budget. The solution of we've already seen here in Western Australia more prisons go up, but the fact that, you know, so much money is being put into, I mean, $54 million allocated to police stations, not just here but in Queensland and South Australia. There's a real presumption there, isn't there, that we're going to build these prisons and more police stations and have this controlling effect, which I guess for a lot of people is sort of going back to the bad old days, isn't it, of the relationship that police have with our people.
Empowering law and culture, empowering elders to take control back over in their communities, getting respect back from the young people, dealing with really difficult things like petrol sniffing and antisocial behaviour that comes from that are all part and parcel. But what I find most irky about it is that you're taking Aboriginal money from Aboriginal programs and giving it to the states and territories, who really should be using their own resources to manage their own law and justice regimes.
As a Noongar, Dennis, what are your views on the funding for Indigenous language support that is going to be cut by $9.5 million over the next 5 years? How important is language in the survival of culture?
Well, it's most people will say that language is one of the most important aspects of who you are and your identity. And while, you know, I know that there are many people out there that can't speak their language, it's not because we gave it up or wanted to give it up. It was because it was beaten out of some people. And in some places, missions and reserves and stuff, you weren't allowed to speak language. So this revival that I've seen over the last 20 years is now really at threat. And it's so essential to maintaining law. That's Aboriginal law and culture. It's in your identity that... That is something that's a real blow to, I think, to us as Aboriginal people, as people who have got certain rights, and you've got a right to speak your own language. But when you're resource-strapped and there's nothing really for facilitating that, because, you know, you hear this Aboriginal radio program and, you know, the Muriyup Dabakan language program comes on all the time, and the people are picking up language, and language and Noongar language is coming back really strong, and lots of speakers of Noongar language, and that's part and parcel because there's been resources and people have been given the opportunity to make that happen. now that's going to be really under threat. And once again, it's saying to Aboriginal people across Australia, your languages aren't important to us. You speak English, you become like everyone else. There's no special place in this country for you or your language. You're an Australian like all of us. And that's just so sad. It's really, really sad.
The government says that the priority areas come under their Indigenous Advancement Strategy. And you have to wonder about who's being advanced and where, don't you?
Yeah, well, only Mr. Mundine and Miss Langdon and Twee Forrest and those people that are on that Indigenous Advisory Group would know the nuts and bolts of that advancement strategy. It's certainly not spelled out very, very clearly in the way that they've dealt with the budget. You know, Clontarf, $13 million extra to Clontarf for 3,000 places. No, if Clontarf is working and kids are going to school and they're getting a good education and they're being strong in their culture and language, I don't know enough about the programs there and the results of them to really comment on that. But you would hope that is an indication that something's working and they want to put money towards it. Well, that's good. That's good.
All right, so we can't let you go without, of course, talking about the effect that the cuts will have on Aboriginal legal services, not just here in Western Australia, but across the country. There is a national body, the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Services, NATSLs, and of course this has been high on the NATSLs agenda since last year when there was a murmur around that there's going to be big cuts, and we've spoken out about it a lot since then, Dennis, in regards to government saying, look, these cuts, they're not going to affect your frontline services, but there's no actual other way that it's not going to affect it, is there?
No, not at all, and it will be up to the Aboriginal communities in WA about what they want for their legal service in the coming years. I can just encourage people to get involved, get some people who are movers and shakers. Not that we haven't got movers and shakers currently in our board, but we really need people who are going to be able to look to the future and what sort of service we have. 40 years of 40 years
Sorry
of history.
That.
That's all right, Jade.
So what does that button do? We know now.
Donkerbert now. deaf in both ears. But we need some people to put their hand up and say, well, we'll help shape whatever we can to continue to have some kind of legal service. If that means, we have to have a look at what we provide as far as criminal law and civil law and family law, well, we'll do that. But at the moment, come 30th of June 2015, we'll be looking at taking 30 staff members out of the service, which means massive changes. And there is going to be a negotiation between the Commonwealth and WA on how it runs its law and justice program. It says it there in the budget papers. So, yeah, big changes ahead, and I just hope that our community get behind and support. We've got an election coming up very soon. If you want to be a part of making that change and ensuring that the service lasts for another 40 years, please put your hand up, come in, be a part of that, be on the board, and see if we can create a service that can continue to provide the very best service we can, even if that's limited.
Dennis Eggington, thank you for your time on Law Matters today.
Thank you, Joe.
Oh, before you do go, I know you want to give a bit of a shout out. All of our court officers are currently in Perth from all over Western Australia doing some training. And I tell you what, it's been fantastic to walk around the corridors of the ALS and bump into all these familiar faces that, you get used to seeing names on emails or get together each 2 years at a staff conference or something. Great having a yarn with Kevin Blurton today and seeing different faces popping around. It's good to see, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, of course, listeners will know the music of our current court officer who's just been recruited to the Kununurra office, Mr. Peter Brandy. So, he's a very well-known performer, and his music gets played on this station, and we're lucky to have him on board. Charmaine Taylor, who's now in Port Hedland, has come on board. So, looking around and seeing people who have been with us for 26 years, 25 years, 21 years, dedicated their whole life to working in their communities for their people by providing, a legal advice and legal representation. And we're very privileged and proud to have them all in for the week.
An incredible role that our court officers do play in Perth and regional areas of the state. So g'day to everyone and great to have you here in Perth. This is Law Matters, Noongar Radio 100.9 FM. Do stay tuned. You're going to refresh your memories on a racist sign, call it what it is, that went up in Coolgardie a couple of months ago in relation to an iPhone. Stay tuned. Joining us shortly on our program is one of our lawyers, Jonathan Crabtree. This is Law Matters on Noongar Radio 100.9 FM. Jodie Hoffman with you for this hour and good to have your company. Want to refresh your memory now about an incident that happened in the WA town of Coolgardie a couple of months ago back in March, and it was something that made the Aboriginal Legal Service act immediately because we were so concerned about a sign that had been placed in the window of the Coolgardie Denver City Hotel. To enlighten us more, welcome to the program Aboriginal Legal Service lawyer Jonathan Crabtree, not from Kalgoorlie. Jonathan, how did I get that wrong? Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jodie. It's good to be here.
You must have been in Kalgoorlie.
I was. And in fact, I did visit Coolgardie and the pub where the incident took place. And look, obviously it frustrated everyone here at ALS that this type of thing could happen in 21st century Western Australia.
It did really have shades of the Wicked West all over it. But firstly, set the scene for us. Tell us what Coolgardie's like.
Yeah, well, Coolgardie's a very old town. It's certainly a shadow of its former glory back when the mine, the gold rushes were on and the mines were bustling. It was actually a very large town. Now it's just kind of a shadow of its former self, and there's probably a couple of hundred people there. It's not a big town.
What ratio are we talking Aboriginal to non-Aboriginal residents of Coolgardie?
I believe it's 50-50, certainly the publican in this instance was not Aboriginal, and obviously because the ratio is 50-50, there were a lot of people who, you know, took offence to this incident and who obviously felt like their rights were being violated.
All right, so what's happened is that there's been a sign placed at the pub. Tell us what that sign said.
Yeah, so there was a sign that was placed just next to the service area in the pub, and it said that no Indigenous person will be served in this hotel until my Apple iPhone is returned that was stolen on Saturday 1st of March 2014. And then there's a name there of a person who the publican thought had taken her phone.
That's pretty incredible. I mean, I don't know where that person's been, but that's incredible to think that you can write a sign like that in 2014 and get away with it.
Yeah, it is. And obviously, we were keen to take action pretty quick, and we actually got a couple of complaints from people who were actually passing through the town. So they weren't actually in the town, but they obviously were affected, being Aboriginal people, by this sign, and they were obviously angered. They took to Facebook, and then from there, contact was made with them. And so at the moment, we've actually got human rights complaints which have been lodged. And so currently we're in the process of having discussions with our clients and with the publican, and so we'll see what happens in that space.
Jonathan, talk us through what actually happened after the Aboriginal Legal Service became aware of that sign and the obvious offence that it had caused Aboriginal people either from the town or passing through the town. With regard to liquor licensing, there's only a few avenues that you can take with regards to complaining about that publican, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So under the Liquor Control Act, you can complain about a licensee if you're one of three bodies. So if you're a local government shire, if you're or city, if you are the director of liquor licensing, or you're the commissioner of police. Now, what you can do is you can apply to the Liquor Commission and say that they're There's a reason why a licensee, a publican, should be disciplined. And so discipline can include things like suspending the licence, putting extra conditions on the licence to make sure this type of thing doesn't happen in the future. And so that's... Because there are only three bodies which can apply to the Liquor Commission, and then the Liquor Commission has the option to discipline, we wrote to each of those three bodies. And we received responses from those bodies. Unfortunately, the responses were not that they would pursue it. And obviously, I think it's been reported in the media recently, the Shire of Coolgardie actually got quite vocal when our CEO came out and said that their minutes, which kind of displayed their reasoning as to why they wouldn't be going after the licensee, That really disappointed us, and some comments were made by the Shire, and so now we're actually quite upset with the Shire's view, and we're looking at other avenues that we can pursue to kind of, keep the Shire accountable.
I know that the concerns of the Aboriginal Legal Service were sent by letter to the Shire, along with the police and liquor licensing, and addressed at the Shire of Coolgardie's meeting on the 29th of April. Not the response or public speaking out by the Shire that you would have expected as a follow-up, and I guess that led to the Aboriginal Legal Service having to come out public again about this incident to actually redress some of the misinformation that was being circulated through the media.
Yeah, that's right. So basically, the Shire of Coolgardie didn't understand what we were asking them to do. They thought that we were asking them to endorse a complaint for racial discrimination under the Racial Discrimination Act. That's not what we were doing. We're asking them to make a complaint against the licensee under the Liquor Control Act. So essentially, the Shire of Coolgardie just didn't have a clue what we were asking. And then they as well, in their meeting minutes, complained about the fact that there'd been a lot of recent crime in town, and basically saying that it was kind of understandable why the licensee had done this, which is just astounding to us. We just don't understand where they're coming from at all, and it's again got our backs up here, and we're looking at what other options we can pursue to keep the Shire accountable, and also as well to make them understand that this type of thing isn't okay in 2014.
It's interesting you say that the Shire didn't fully understand what it was that we were asking, and totally misunderstood what it was that we were asking, because to bring in things to minutes and agendas that but look at the crime that's been happening and this and that, it's almost saying that, racism is tolerable.
Yeah, absolutely. That was our opinion when we read the Shire minutes. We were pretty gobsmacked, and certainly we just were obviously blown away by how much they didn't understand in terms of the law, and then also the fact that they had this opinion basically backing up the publican and kind of closing ranks around her and protecting her, and we didn't think that was appropriate.
And I guess, it's not been about point scoring any of this. It's been about highlighting that racism cannot be tolerated. It has been in the past in this country. It should not be tolerated. It is 2014, and hopefully through the actions of the legal service here, we've been able to sort of highlight and educate people a little bit more about why it was so wrong what happened. What does happen now with the process? Is there ongoing discussion with the Shire or the publican, Deb Ovens, or what is happening?
Yeah, so at the moment, we're representing those three clients who lodged racial discrimination complaints with the Australian Human Rights Commission. And so we're in confidential discussions at the minute with the publican, so we can't say too much about that. But then we're also having reviewed the Shire's minutes, which are the reasons for their decision, which was a decision that was just wrong. We are also considering another avenue, which is to maybe seek judicial review of the Shire's decision. So that means going to the court and getting the court to have a look at the Shire's decision. And we think the court will say that the Shire have completely misunderstood what the ALS has asked them to do, and that they'll need to, in fact, go make another decision, and the court will maybe provide instructions as to how they should make that decision. So that's the option available to us.
All right. Look, Jonathan, thank you for your time on Law Matters, and we look forward to being kept up to date with what is happening in regards to that Coolgardie racism incident. But hopefully that by the time this is all over, all of the parties involved will know that there are certain things and certain roads that you shouldn't go down at all, hey?
Yeah, absolutely, Jodie. Yeah, could not agree more.
All right. Thanks for your time on the program, Jonathan. We look forward to speaking with you again before too long.
Thanks, Jodie. Look forward to it.
Jonathan Crabtree doesn't work in Kalgoorlie at our Aboriginal Legal Service office. That's how big our office is in Perth. You can work with somebody for months and not realise they're in the same building. He has worked in and around Kalgoorlie and obviously was one of the key players representing the Aboriginal Legal Service for that Coolgardie matter. He actually works out of our awesome civil unit down in the Perth office. So this is the Law Matters radio program. And just a reminder to our listeners that the ALS does have 15 offices across Western Australia. So if you're needing any support or information of a legal nature, you can phone our free call number on 1-800-019-900 and be connected through to your local office. Support and representation available in criminal law, family law, civil and human rights law. And all our information is also on our website at www.als.org.au, as are all our radio programs. So you hear us here on Noongar Radio every second Wednesday, repeated Sunday nights, but then after broadcast, the program does go up onto the ALS website as well. So no excuse not to tune into Law Matters. Got to give another plug, though, to the Noongar Radio mob here who are wanting people to step forward and share and record your own Stolen Generation stories. Of course, Sorry Day is coming up. Annual event happens around the country, Sorry Day on the 26th of May. Do stay tuned to Noongar Radio for events that are happening around the place. I know that the big Perth event is on again and always attracts a lot of people, and some really poignant and important speeches on the day, and stallholders and community getting together. It's really a really special time to remember our Stolen Generations and all the contributions that they have made, and to sort of acknowledge the trials and tribulations that many of our mob have faced across time as well. We're just about out of time on Noongar Radio, but thank you for your company. From me, Jodie Hoffman, look forward to your company again in a couple of weeks' time.